Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, where we cut through the noise and talk with the voices actually moving industries forward. Today's guest isn't just another executive coach riding the leadership wave. Ted Whetstone is the real deal. He's a transformation strategist with global experience. He's spent decades inside high-growth companies and Fortune 100 giants, helping leaders shift from reactive fire drills to bold visionary leadership. Ted, he doesn't just do super surface level fixes. He helps leaders think in systems, connect the dots others miss, and build real influence that sticks. If you've ever felt like your leadership hit a ceiling, Ted's the guy you want in your corner. What sets him apart? He's on a mission to move leadership from me to we. It's about collective impact, shared purpose, and rethinking how we navigate complexity in business and in life. Today, we'll unpack how speaking has amplified his mission and how he challenges assumptions in the boardroom and why thinking differently is the new leadership superpower. So if you're a leader or a speaker ready to do more than just manage, you're in the right room. So let's dive in. Welcome to the spotlight, Ted.
Thank you, Kelly. So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I love having you. And you've had this global career from running companies to coaching top tier execs. But I love to go back and find out what the origin story is here and what was happening and what was the catalyst moment that shifted you from being maybe an operator to a transformation strategist. That's a good story.
Thank you for asking. Part of that is following your own personal thread, right? And I'd love to speak a little bit about that. But from a career perspective, my background was engineering and science. And so I'm a professed left brainer. And out of school, got into a great opportunity, a company with lots of responsibility. And I was running a subsidiary overseas in Asia at the age of 29. And certainly got my experience doing that. I left corporate America because I wanted a greater sense of independence and control. And I wasn't sure what that was. I stumbled into consulting, and that brought on all the capabilities that I love: problem solving, people, and then organizations. And I did that for 10, 15 years, large companies like Toyota, Subaru, big firms that have complex operations, lots of people, and difficult challenges. So they would bring in experts to come in with either analytical skills, program skills, change management. All was very left brain. And I remember doing some of these big transformation projects, which were always successful, by the way. And that has nothing to do necessarily with me. It has everything with engaging people. And when we talk about that systems thing, you know, you have two ears and one mouth. Use them in that proportion and it works. So we're here to talk about speaking, but quite frankly, these come first. But what was happening was working with organizations, and I loved it. I kept saying, what about the people? And organizations continue to see people as functional units. And that's what really made the shift towards executive coaching, where I could work with leaders being effective themselves, being effective with people, not necessarily just process and profits and all that kind of thing. And so that's what ended up a shift from a left brain mindset to a little more right brain. But quite frankly, it is both. It is people. It is the whole thing. And that's my career journey, if you will.
It's interesting that you speak about you see the value in the people, and you're right. We made a comment before we started this interview about feeding the beast. In the corporate world, there's turnover and they are really considered like fodder, like you're just feeding the beast all the time, but you're not taking care of the people that actually run the company, who actually make everything happen, that deal with your customers, that deal with your marketing that are out there talking about what they do so other people get involved in it. And it's amazing when they get something happens to a lot of these leaders when they get to the very top of the food chain, it's if they're done with that. And so I think you're really powerful in this scenario here. But looking back, what did you believe that leadership was in the beginning? And what do you know now that completely rewrote the script?
Yeah, thank you. Even leadership of self. And even speaking like this, which I appreciate, we often get very transfixed with, oh my God, look good, don't make a mistake. And leadership looked like knowing what to do, saying it the right way every time. It probably never was, but certainly today's changing world, we know we don't know what's coming next, right? We know we're only doing our best. And I think it's an overused term, but it's not over, under, it's important. Authenticity, we say it, but it really is transparency. It is just being, right? And we're such a world of doing. And so leadership probably traditionally to me and many to many probably looked like management. Leading meant I lead, you follow. And that's exactly what I believe is the opposite of leadership is. I say leaders don't lead others. Leaders cause leaders. And clients suddenly do this and they realize their mission is not knowing it all. It's getting the most out of their people, not just out of them, but for them and raising them up. And look, we talk about corporate America and as though it's bad. Not all companies are bad. In fact, there's wonderful leadership at lots of companies that understand and embrace the value of people, either for their knowledge, their caring, the culture, and or their ideas. They know what is going on and what needs to happen. And that's why I get back to this. Leadership is listening and uplifting those who want to step forward and helping them.
This is such a perfect conversation. It's so timely. And I love your focus on listening. I just had this conversation the other day with a colleague of mine. And we were talking about, I was saying, your ideas, they're like your babies. And companies ought to look at it like this. If you want your employees' ideas, they're like babies. Don't kill the babies or they won't bring you any more. So you really need to embrace that all ideas, if you consider them just ideas, welcome them. And then you can feed through them and get rid of the ones that aren't going to work. But along with that, there should be respect for the people that take the chance, that take the shot to bring you their ideas. And I think that really is all about listening. Just like you said, are you listening to your employees?
And are you eliciting? Right? Because they don't always feel comfortable bringing things forth. They don't know if they're going to look dumb bringing a dumb. But one person raises an idea and, oh, that gives me an idea.
Absolutely. Right?
And so part of this is a term called psychological safety. It's creating this space where people feel comfortable trying on ideas, collaborating on it, that there's no right. My idea is not better than yours. It's together we create something that none of us would have created. And that is the leader's role, is to create that space and bring people into that. The other thing is you mentioned it's the diversity of ideas. You want to have people that not necessarily don't agree with you. It's not about that have different viewpoints, perspectives. And we need to understand all those because, look, quite frankly, not only do you get better ideas like that you wouldn't have seen, but there's greater resilience by understanding all those perspectives. It's when we get very narrowly focused, we can get ourselves in trouble. So leadership really is itself fulfilling by helping the organization flourish.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. That adage that high tides raise all boats,
yeah,
it applies here so much. And having been in corporate, I was in corporate a long time, but I'm extremely entrepreneurial, but I spent several years in corporate, several different chapters in corporate. Every time I was in it, when that chapter ended, I was actually happy about it. Go off and do my own thing. And then you get a big offer, you go in, it's great, it pays well, but you realize, wow, my skin's on too tight. But I would watch the leadership strategies. And it's interesting, all the people that you would say were, let's call them I'll call them the backbone of the company, the ones that actually do all the work. That's such an exciting group to work with because they're the ones who actually have the information. And then I would watch the people in the middle, who now finally got the power to make new decisions. And they have to decide, are you going to honor the people at the top who got you the position? And now you feel like you've almost made it into the club. Or are you going to deal with the people that you finally can help rise everyone up? You can now take the things that actually everybody knows and actually get something done, actually make some changes. And it's interesting watching those people in the middle because they're a different animal now. They're different now. Which side are they going to play with? So there's politics and there's jealousy and there's all kinds of things attached to it. But I think that's where you come in such a powerful way. I know that's what I loved about it. I loved actually, we call it from the floor because I was in gaming for a long time, but that's where the brilliance is. It's not at the top of the food chain, I'm here to tell you. It is not. So it's people at the top are only as good as how they bring everybody in the bottom, in the middle, all the way through, how they bring them all up. They're only as good as that in my book.
Totally agree. And it's hard to, the problem with corporate debate, they're just big groups of people. It's all the way down. It's almost like what I call, I'm a nerd, right? Fractal leadership, which is self-similarity at all scales. We see this with mountains and all these other rivers, right? Lightning, that's a fractal pattern. And it's just a bigger lightning bolt with more branches in a bigger company. But if you have the same philosophy at all levels, then it becomes less about top, middle, bottom, right? Which it is, but it really is demonstrating leadership at different scales. Leadership's not just something for the folks at the top or even in the middle. It comes down to the individual. It comes down to small, right? Non-formal connections within organizations. It becomes a ethos or a culture. And you're right. It needs to be demonstrated by the very top. The expression, the fish rots from the head down. If leadership at the top is talking one thing, but doing another, it's not working.
Not gonna work.
And I hear you about the middle managers. That is the toughest spot because they are required to deal with all these strategic imperatives, right? And yet deal with the people with less resources. And that's where we're just burning people out. It crushes me. It's the reason I want to help those people as much as the senior folks, because they're just surviving and we need to have balance no matter where you are.
That's such a perfect statement. Balance is everything, frankly, whether you're talking about your company, whether you're talking about the job or the work that you have, the family that you have, you're all about that. And one of your core tenets, I think what we get right down to is you're talking about shifting leadership from me to we. Let's talk about your company, Breakthrough Think. Oh, such a great name. Breakthrough Think. That's just clarity right there.
Yeah, it's breaking through your thinking is the breakthrough thinking. I started this with a platform about transforming the mind of humanity as though I had the answers, right? So there was the arrogance. And then I had to kind of reframe it as, quite frankly, we're all in our own way. And what does Mark Twain say? It's not the things you know that get you in trouble, but it's the things you know for sure that just ain't. And so we are all necessarily locked into a perspective, a mental model, like we have our biases. It's one thing to have them and know it, right? Be aware of it. But when we're not, we don't realize we're not as in, I don't want to say control, but influence and authority as who we are than these. So anyway, Breakthrough Think really is probably less about thinking. And it is this, I don't want to say it's just feeling, but this idea of we becomes not just an abstraction, but there is a phenomenon in nature called emergence, where a few different things that are very simple, ants, okay, they operate by a couple simple rules. But those simple rules and all these complex interactions creates this hive culture where kind of everyone knows what's going on, even though no one has a rule book. And the we create some, yeah, the we create something that is emergent that can't be pre-programmed, predestined. And so the idea that we're going to come from, we're going to figure out what the answer looks like and then get there, it's never going to happen. You have to have an intentionality. You can say what direction we want to go. Let's embrace and roll and interact and then discover, right, along with that. And so it really is a two-way street between intention and discovery.
First of all, I love that analogy with the ants. You're talking to someone who loves to garden and knows all about watching ants, usually in some place you do not want them, like my dog's food dish. But you're absolutely right. It's funny how they are powerful. These little tiny things, incredibly powerful. They work really well together. But if you disrupt their pattern, they think and they figure out another way to do it. And they find a way to come back together. Actually, they're pretty admirable creatures, considering how incredibly small they are. And imagine they work together with this one thread of, I don't know what kind of chemical it is that kind of keeps them all moving in the same direction. But if you disrupt it, they still find a way and they still all come back together. Interesting as a company analogy. Let me ask you again, loving your core value of from me to we, what's that actually look like in real time when you walk into an organization that's still stuck in an old model?
Yeah, good question. Again, I started as a change management consultant. And again, last I checked, it's all about change. So we're all change managing all the time. What happens is companies get stuck because, and I have a feeling if you're talking about, let me try to think of a good circumstance. It's, yes, sometimes leadership is stuck, right? They're not listening. They want to just go one direction. But I find it's more that we haven't trained the organization how to work together. And what I mean by train is, yes, they need to understand this. But for instance, big project I was involved with where they knew they just wanted to go from position A to position B. And great, let's just go there. And I said, wait. Let's talk to the various stakeholders who are going to own solution B.
Imagine.
Let's just imagine.
Jeanette.
And we talk to them. And then, of course, this consultant would come back and say, okay, here's what we heard, right? Now, sometimes you tweak the information to help guide people because, right, analysis paralysis. Part of our job is to keep things moving. But the fact that people were heard in the first place reduces the resistance to change. Because someone once corrected me, and I appreciated this. I said, you know what? People just don't like change. And of course, they gave a little spanking and said, actually, people do like change. We love to go to a new country. We love a new pair of shoes, right? We need a new outfit, new hairdo. We don't like to be changed.
Totally with you. It's called moving your cheese. If I move my cheese, it's just fine and it's an exciting day. If you move my cheese, yep. I'm not excited about it at all because now you've created more work for me. You've now created a whole lot more I got to do. And so how you introduce change, you either bring people in with it and let them know this is happening for not only a good reason, but it's going to help you too, or you lose them and they end up sometimes sabotaging the change.
That's right. And it can be a yes and. It's, hey, we need to move here to here. We have some thoughts on that, but we want to get yours. And by the way, they may have some great thoughts. But that's my answer to you. The me to we, especially in leadership, the habit and probably the fear of not knowing, right? So I'm just going to say this is what we should do. It's the smaller leader, and I don't mean it pejoratively, but it's the missed opportunity of talking to people. A, not just making them feel heard, right? They have great ideas. But later, when you then say, great, we spoke to all of you. This is what we heard. And given that, this is what looks like made sense. And then when Seth says, yeah, that does make sense. 90% of the challenge, right? Because inevitably, when you get to B, you didn't foresee certain things, right?
So you brought everybody with you. You brought them together and said, we took everybody into consideration and your ideas and the concerns that you had. And I think we've worked out a good pattern. This is what we're going to try next.
Right.
Let's do this.
And we get there. And guess what? When we get there, we see new things we couldn't have seen before. But now people, they're empowered. They're part of it. And they're like, oh, we just do this and that'll fix that. And someone else says, we'll do that. And that last piece that no external entity can do, no leader can do, by getting buy-in, the organization does. And that's a change process. But you brought up something else, and I won't go down the rabbit hole, but it does help to facilitate groups of people because there are lots of good ideas. Now, how are we going to decide which one's a good or a bad idea? And again, if the leader decides it, not as empowering. If you let them go around forever, that may never get to a solution. But you can facilitate certain frameworks that can help them collectively decide, yeah, these are the three best ideas. And not that these are terrible, just they're not as good as these. And so people whose ideas didn't get taken, at least they were heard and they're bought into Bob, Frank, Jill's ideas. And again, you have cohesiveness. So tools, methodologies, it's all just helping people do what they want to do, which is work together to make things better.
And their buy-in is everything. I have to say that's an experience of mine as well, because I was in corporate and I was director of marketing and advertising in the gaming industry. And I literally would deal with the floor to the top. But what was great, we decided, because morale was so low when I first got there, we need a vision committee. And I pull all the people that in each department that are well-liked and respected. That was the key. Find a person well-liked and respected in each department and bring them in and get their feedback. Let them go back out and get more feedback and bring it in. And now we're making this cohesive effort so that when I go in to sell it in to the CEO or the managing partner, I can say, and these are the results we're looking at. This is what's really happening down here. And this is the solution for that. And here's how we can get there. Wow, you don't get any pushback. You just don't. Except maybe from the middle management guy that might have to work a little bit more than expected. Oh, but it makes for a better unified company. So I love your strategy. So you work with companies. This is also dealing with some of the high level clients that you have. What are the unseen patterns that you notice? The patterns when you're coaching them, are there hidden saboteurs that show up again and again?
Wow. I'll say no, because rarely do people get elevated, right? That's not true. The saboteurs could be that people get elevated because of their technical prowess. Someone was a good software coder, and wow, you ought to be able to manage these people. They didn't have experience managing people. So now, that's just a lack of experience, which is why a lot of times when people get elevated, they'll bring a coach to help them learn, like, now I'm managing my peers. That's awkward. How to have courageous conversations. But the other ones that are, people tend to move up organizations because they are influential, because they do know how to run those relationships. And sometimes they're not always technically strong. So how do you, if you're a leader and you're managing people, let's just say smarter than you, good. You can get an awful lot done if you're willing to give someone else the credit.
Oh my gosh, if you're a leader, you want to surround yourself with smart people and capable people. And again, high tides raise all boats. If you have smart people around you, that's a gift. That's the goal. Get people who know how to do what you don't know how to do. And the whole situation improves. So I love that you say that. So now let me ask you a really interesting question based on how things are right now, the things that are changing and how it affects your world. You know, when ChatGPT, OpenAI came out, and it creates so much better efficiency in so many areas. It makes your employees more efficient, things are more organized, and I got to tell you, it's only going to get more ridiculous next year in 2026 because AGI is here, and when that happens, that's when that goes widespread. That's going to be a whole different thing. And now you've got people, if they're at the top, you have the concern that, oh, do not make the mistake of making your employees less important. Now they'll be more efficient and they may be able to contribute in new and different ways. How do you look to manage that, Ted? What's your message going to be with that? How important is the going from me to we going to be with all of the technology changes that are coming?
Yeah, you're right. I think we're still a ways off from true AGI, general AI, but maybe it's 3 years. But it's a question of yes and instead of but. Right? We tend to think of, oh, I have humans or I can have AI. And that's just a human thing. We just think in ors. And all I do is encourage people to think of ands. What could we do with people? We have these things called computers. We couldn't live without them. And they help us do all these wonderful things. We've been doing that for 20, 30 years, right? No problems. Things went faster. It did change some jobs, right? It created all kinds of opportunities. The bottom line is when we think we have a fixed envelope of opportunity, then we look at things like AI is going to take away jobs, and it will in the short term. But what's it going to expand in terms of what's possible? That's what we have to look at. If we, it, oh, what else is there that's going to come as a result of this, right? Or get created as a result of this that we hadn't foreseen. And so the yes and is there's this change that's going to happen, and there's all the opportunity. And I just have to think that the opportunity upside is far greater than the downside. And we just forget that the human spirit is. Creativity is just a phenomenal thing, that it's not about being efficient. It is about being effective. And look, we have self-driving cars. Quite frankly, I think they're better driving probably than humans. Okay, great.
Yes.
It was an automobile anyway. All we did was steer it. Is that okay? That's all we did. Fine, we gave up steering. What can we do instead? My goodness, I could be in my car ride writing a blog post or talking to someone, doing something more effective. So I view these all as actually empowering humans to be more human and less robotic, quite frankly.
I think that's a great perspective, and I agree with you 100% because there's a couple of things. One is that people do business with people they like. They do it because of connection. So all of this efficiency that's coming along can actually help with that, but it's not going to replace that because people buy people. You can sell, but buying and selling is part of our DNA. And as you say, we have indomitable spirit, really, when it gets down to it. When things are at their worst, we're at our best. I remember that was a quote out of a movie called Starman with Jeff Bridges, where there's an alien who had come down, but human-like. And he said, "Do you want me to tell you what's most wonderful about you? What's most amazing about you?" And that is that when things are at their worst, you are at your best. In many ways, that's very true. But I think this is going to be an exciting chapter because while there may be more efficiency, it creates more, we'll have more time to connect better. We'll have more time to reach out and touch people in a new way and become better at those skills, which we need far more. But I think it's going to be great. Some of these, I can think of nothing I loathe more than creating sales funnels and writing email. I just loathe it. It's very powerful. You need it. It's very important in your business. AI can do that for you. But to get on the phone and talk with people, to actually have a Zoom meeting, I think Zoom is the greatest thing in the so much better than phone. So I love what you're saying, and I think this is going to be powerful. Let me move us into an area of importance to this show, and that is speaking and visibility. And I'd love to know how public speaking became part of your work, what that looked like, and how it changed the way people engage with your message.
Wow, it is. And it's funny, after this conversation, maybe we should call it public interacting.
I like that.
Right? Because speaking sounds like I'm going to talk and you're going to listen. And that's like engaging people, asking them questions, having them think for themselves. That's more interesting than just
Far
being
more.
told what to think. It's interesting. When I was a kid, oh boy, let's see how fast I can do this. As a kid, I wanted to be an inventor. I was just interested in how things worked. But in my high school years, I remember washing my dad's car, and there was a tape in the, glove. And I pushed the tape in, and this was Conant Nightingale Productions about acres of diamonds and these stories of the South African farmer who sold his farm in search of riches because diamonds were happening everywhere. Only to find out that the person who bought his farm knew what diamonds look like in the rough. It's a story. And it turned out to be one of the biggest diamond mines in the world. And Zig Ziglar and all these people, it was the act of sharing information, sounded like speaking, but it's wisdom being passed on. And it's not for shortage of probably thousands, if not millions of years of wisdom being passed on that some reason people can't hear. And so we keep making the same mistake, but a little gets through every time. And I think that was what started my speaking career, was being inspired by new ideas, by revelations that, and by these voices and stories. And I think that's probably the word is inspired. I remember Les Brown, right? You got to be hungry. I think that might be the most powerful force in the universe is inspiration. And it doesn't come from the outside as motivation. It comes from the inside as inspiration. And it's that same thing, difference between sympathy, I feel sorry for you, and empathy. I get where you're at. Like, I'm over there with you. And so I think the part of speaking that's really had an influence for me personally is I've moved from the kind of expert, here's some information and some tools and tricks, which is great. But to your point, we can get that on ChatGPT now. Better than any speaker is going to tell us tools and tricks to do anything. I'm now more interested in helping people learn how to think, how to even understand what they think. And that's what started me on my journey was actually an NPR episode called These Things I Think. And it was the first time I said, what do I think that hasn't been given to me? So speaking for me has moved from a more expert to a more inquisitive, almost philosophical, what are we really trying to achieve? And getting us to stop and think, what is it I want? What does turn me on? What is the difference I want to make? And it doesn't matter what in what area of your life, but not having that purposeful engagement, that inspiration to cause, create, and change, which we all have. That to me is what the speaking then changed. And they could care less about the what, the how to. Then they're interested in the who, because you're plugged into you and I want to be plugged into me. And now we have a really interesting conversation. That's when my career took off.
Such a powerful message, Ted. I love that you're talking about that. I love it. I can't even tell you how that resonates for me. I really feel teaching, I think that's where our schools have gotten off track, where they stop. School's all about teaching you how to think, not what to think, but how to think. And we've lost that. We've lost that for quite a while now. Now it's, you go in there and it's about telling you what to think. And that doesn't work. We want thinking people out there that, and on top of which, you are inundated on a daily basis. As a student, as an adult, you are just indoctrinated with so much information. It's flooding towards you. And you never take the time. People don't take the time to figure out, what do I really think about this? You said something earlier. I think about it as going into the cornfield. It used to be that you would go out and do your chores as a kid. You go out and do your chores. It was quiet. There's no cell phone. There's no TV going. There were things you had to do, especially if it was outside. And you had a chance to walk and talk and think about what was important to you, what you wanted next, what had value to you. And now there's just too much noise going on all the time. And people have forgotten what they think. They don't actually know. And I think the hardest question right now, if someone were to ask you, is what do you want next? What do you want to do? It stops people in their tracks. When I ask them, it stops them in their tracks. They don't actually know. And that's such a sad state of affairs, isn't it? If you don't know what you want next.
It's a crime, quite frankly. We have been just beaten. I think the term is Taylorism was the inventor of the sort of manufacturing mindset. And so companies have learned this functional, you have this role, this is what you do. You don't do things that are not that, right? And you put people in these seats and you restrict them. And you were talking earlier about some of these people you worked with, the gaming companies. Those are those informal networks. It's not the formal networks that get things done. It's the informal. And it's the people who are creative, who collaborate, who are open, right? And we say team player, but it really is. And I think we all have it. I took a year off work I got to write the book, What Do I Think? And How Do We Help the Human Mind Figure This Out? And I was right. The whole half of the book, front half of the book was what's wrong with the human mind, not what's wrong, but how do we get here? And the whole second half was going to be what to do about it. I didn't have that answer, but it starts with what isn't the answer. And the answer isn't that somebody else knows more than me. They might know nuclear physics. That's good. They might know this other thing, but only you know you and what you're here to do. And it actually isn't as scary, I think, as it can sound when, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always appreciate the term for now. So
I was going to say next, but that's perfect. Same thing. It's like, you don't have to know what you're going to be when you grow up forever. Just what do you want to do next?
Yes.
Boil it down to the next thing you'd like to accomplish that you'll say, I'm really proud of that. I wanted to do it. I did it. On to the next thing after that.
Yep. I 1000% agree. That's like the lily pad metaphor. I'm not sure where I came this from, but you're on a lily pad. Maybe you're a frog and you can only see the next group of lily pads around you. So you jump to one, but from there, now you can see things you couldn't see at that first one. And that's just the way it is. So I love your point. It's almost like that even in coaching, we're not trying to get the client to hit a target. We're just trying to change the direction of the arrow toward. And we're all moving toward our true north, right? But we have to weave and find and feel things out. But there's no knowing what that's going to be, just the adjustment toward.
That's what makes for a great coach. I love coaching. And that's the reason, is that it's not about hitting a bullseye. It's about getting you to think about what you want next and maybe removing the barriers that are keeping you from going after that thing that will give you yet one more accomplishment in a long line of things that you want to do in a lifetime. And that's what I love about it. And I know this is what you're magical at as well. While you were speaking, just because I want to finish that up, what was the biggest insight or breakthrough that you've had while speaking, or something that really surprised you even on stage?
I'm going to say vulnerability. It's too easy to say, but I guess for me personally, I was out there speaking to the audience and nothing was landing. And it wasn't until I spoke to that person, right? You'd look through and then you just connect with someone and you're connecting with a human being, which really means you're connecting to you. But that was the big aha for me personally, whereas I was speaking at and even speaking about, I became like speaking and to our conversation, not just to, but with, even though I was doing the words, I think given someone's reaction, if someone's like this while you're speaking, you're not going to be the same as if they're like this. The environment does affect what comes out. So it is a two-way dialogue. It is participatory. But it was also speaking for and not about. And that's what also shifted. It was one of those things where I would stop and thought, it was silence. Because sorry, I've got a cat that's wanting to be annoying.
That's okay.
And so that's the difference that happened for me. I was busy speaking about and speaking at and minimal shift. And not a lot of people afterwards be that excited to talk to me. And then when I just got real and got vulnerable and talked about my own warts and wrinkles and my own challenges, this same journey of mine, the eyes were like this because it's the human journey and the hero's journey. There's a million stories, but that archetypal struggle is universal. And I think that's what we all connect to.
That's what's real. That's how you do it. There's a lot of information out there. You can get it from a million different arenas, right? That information, the real information is out there. The connection that belongs to us humans, that belongs to how we relate to each other, and stories are how we do it. That's our cultural Bible. That's how we make how we create our history, and it keeps us connected. And even at the beginning of this podcast, you mentioned authenticity, which is my favorite word, and it has been forever. Turns out in 2025, that was the word of the year, was authenticity. And I was like, damn, you people have stolen this from me. But no, it's a good thing. It needs to happen. But authenticity is what makes you relatable. And so when you get up there on a stage, and I love to say this to all the people, you have to assume people listen to this show because they want to know about speaking about their business. Can they really do it? Should they do it? How horrible is it? How successful will it make you? You know, all the questions that go with that. And that's great. That's what we explore on this show. But I want to tell everybody out there, it is so not about being perfect or so skilled that everybody will be impressed with your knowledge, because they won't. What they'll be connected to is what you talk about. It's so much about authenticity. Talk to someone that's in the room. I love podcasting because it's a very intimate platform. Wouldn't you agree, everybody out there listening, that when you finish with this podcast today, you know who Ted is enough to decide whether you want to pick up the phone and have a future conversation with him. Because he's really brought it here. Yes, he has good information, but we got to hear how he thinks. Far more important than his information any day of the week. Far more about what he thinks, what he values, what he brings to the table for his clients and for the companies that work for him. And I think that's where the value is in public speaking. So I encourage everybody to not let go of it, even if it scares you to death or you think, oh, they won't like my industry. Why is anybody going to talk about this? Let me tell you, there's some fabulous people that come to this program that are talking across multiple industries. So thank you very much for helping make that point. What would you say, Ted?
I would agree with you, and right? So 100%. Think of someone in your life who said something, did something that you now tell people about. It might have been 20 years ago, could have been 2 days ago. You don't know how you are that same person to someone else. And you may never know.
Sure.
But no question, you will impact people in ways that you never intended. You may never know. And that's the true loss for the individual. And of course, it's quite frankly, I call people stingy for not sharing themselves with us, because there's something I don't get to get because that person didn't share a perspective, an idea, a dream, a challenge, whatever it was. And so I think we have to look at ourselves not as a person on stage and people in an audience. We are a collective called humans. And usually when you're speaking to groups, it's because they want to learn, they want to grow. And that's who's in the room. So I totally agree with you. Get up there, say something that is important to you that you think may help other people. And guess what? It's going to.
It will land. And if you reach just one person, it was worth your time. But the truth is, when you get up on that stage, everybody hear me. When you get off that stage before you ever say a word, the audience is for you. They have given you their attention and they want to hear what you have to say. Yep. And your only big major mistake, and I'm saying it from my perspective, don't get up there and make it all about you, because you are not important. Right. You are not important. It's what you bring to give them. It's what you have, the wisdom that you have gathered, just as Ted has brought up before. It is what you have earned, learned, and want to share that people will relate to, and then they will want to connect with you after the fact.
Yeah, yes, and yes, and, right? That was the other end I forgot to share, but it's of what you do is that service where you're right. We can talk endlessly trying to find a third party trained ear, such as yourself, can help the person understand what it is they're really trying to get at and help share it in a way that's the same information, but it's effective. And guess what? It becomes win-win because the audience starts to open up and you're connecting. And that's the only fear people should have, is not that they have anything valuable to say, is how can I best say it to have the biggest impact? And none of us should try this alone.
That's the practice to get better at telling a better story.
Yes.
Your story. Just get better at that. It's just a skill set. Nothing to scare you to death. It's just the thing that you feel like, wow, in my lifetime, I have learned this and I want to share it. Then you can figure out the skill set to do it at its very best. But they'll love your authenticity. That's the magic sauce. So I think that's terrific. Tell me something, Ted. With everything that you know now, what are you most proud of, whether it's professionally or personally? What are you most proud of?
Fortunately, I can say, having gone out and followed my path, it has been meandering. There is a thing called we need to make money and feed ourselves, and that's a challenge, right? I had the benefit of having had success early in my career, so I could have the money so that I could go out and pursue my dream. To be like those speakers I heard in my dad's car. I wanted to invent, and I still am, the answer to all of mankind's problems. And I think it lies in this me to we, right? It is that simple. Something we probably understood a long time ago, but that kind of reductionist mentality that's become very left brain that got us where we're at, it's hitting the glass ceiling. We're seeing it everywhere. And this new modality of understanding a different approach. I already lost my train of thought, but the big aha for the big happiness for me is to pursue that. Who am I? What do I, not as a oh my gosh, I won't be significant if I don't have my thing. There's a little bit of that. But really, what is that thing that I wish I had when I was, right, younger, or when I was in this role as a manager or in this relationship? And that's the place to share from, because that's relevant to you. You had your learnings around that. And so for me, boy, I can tell you it's not an easy path, but it is, I'm proudest to be on it. And I'm not sure it ever ends, but I'm grateful that I've been able to build a business around who I am, and I'm continuing to do that.
Oh, I love that answer. Because honestly, if you love your work, if you love the adventure you're on, and that's what it is, it's an adventure. Life is an adventure. Your work is an adventure. And if you look at it like that, I remember my dad would say, Will Rogers said, if you find what you love to do, you never work a day in your life. And he lived by that. And I thought that was such incredibly great advice that I took as well. I think it's so important to be stimulated about what you do. And if you aren't, find another path. There's millions of them. There's so many things to do out in the world. You are not stuck. I think we need to share about your book. Please tell us the name of your book and can we get it on Amazon?
Oh, it's not done yet. So it's in my head.
Okay.
And I won't tell you the previous title because that came from a le very left brain approach. But it was this idea that it's not A, the answer is B. And that was my first self-teaching when I realized it's both, and that that was a paradox. That was the first shell of the onion to peel. It was an oh crap, because I just spent a year, right, going down that path. It was a tremendous aha, but it required me then to rethink everything. But the bottom line I've come to is this: there is the way the universe works, the way nature works, and science, for instance, physics, is just the study of the physical universe. It's not a thing. It just looks at how does the thing work and tries to create some rules around it. It's nothing. And when you understand that the universe works by these kind of systems, things just like the ants. Ants have these four roles. In fact, if you want to put it in the show notes, I have a wonderful 8-minute video that talks about this. That, not for me, it's someone else. It's spectacular. But simple things, having just a few different rule sets interacting, can create this amazing complexity. And so, even though the word complexity sounds scary, it's very different than complicated. So if I have four roles in an ant colony, and they can create all the intelligence that looks like they're smart, they're not smart. It's AI. AI is not smart. It just
Nope.
has a lot of information and it makes connections between them. And so when we see that's the way the universe is working, it's, oh, the problem, and I'm on my pedestal now, but it's like we humans think the universe works the way we experience it. And we think we listen to our language. It is all based in a physical context because cave people had to worry about a saber-toothed tiger 20 feet away. That is what mattered. Things mattered, right? Now we're in a completely virtual world of words and ideas, and yet we're using these old constructs. I'm just trying to help people understand how the world works in terms of nature, and you can bring some science to that, and you can bring metaphysics to that. And what you see, how the world doesn't work, which is the way we think it does as humans, now you're open to thinking something new. And that's what the book platform is. And I may need your help figuring out how to put that in a concise way, because it gets quite abstract.
I can't wait till your book comes out. We'll certainly have to have you back on the show to launch your book because I think it's going to be exciting, actually. I love it that you are all about thinking differently, thinking bigger, thinking. It's really beautiful to hear. So I can't wait to see your book. I think it's going to be, read your book. I think it's going to be fabulous and we'll definitely share it with our audience. We'll get people excited when it's getting closer to launch. But what a wonderful endeavor that is. So listen, if someone's listening right now and they feel stuck in an old system, whether it's at work or how they lead, what's one small shift that they could make today that could change the game for them?
Wow. Okay. I think it might be twofold. One is to sit down with a pen and paper in quietness and have that conversation What do I think? And sometimes it helps to say, what don't I think? It's, I don't think these people are good and those people are bad, right? I don't think, right? So that helps sometimes get clear on what you do think. But sometimes what we're not for helps inform us what we are for. So if that comes more quickly, then write all the things you're not for.
And then you
Write.
find out what you are for. You're right. It's
Yes.
like when people say, hate my job, I hate my job. And I always say, that is just such a waste of time. Tell me what it is you hate about that job, then tell me what it looks like to not have that barrier there. What does it really look like? The minute you start to look at what it does look like, now different jobs show up. Get there, do something different. But you have to identify it first. You can't fix it till you raise it and look at it and say, oh, that was good then, but it's not good now. It's time for me to move on. I love your perspective in life, Ted.
If I can, there's one other piece to that. So the one is do your own work inside out, and the other is outside in. Talk to your friends. We call this 360s in the corporate world, but talk to people you know and trust and who know you, and create a safe space for yourself and them, for them to share, number one, some great things about you. Tell me three things that are good about me, because we don't do that enough. And then what do you see are some of my blind spots or opportunities? And the training is to just take it in. And that's hard for us to not do that. Just take it in, because that will give you also, people will, gosh, we want to see more of you. You're smart as can be, but I don't get a feel for who you are. Like, you care about who I am, right? So inside and outside, put those things together. And we were always there. We're the only ones that are hidden from ourselves. Everyone can see it. They can see your genius. They can, so allow people to contribute and do the work. That's the biggest thing we can all do as leaders in life.
What an exceptional exercise for people to do. I agree with you 1000%. Honestly, those people in your life, why are they in your elevator anyway? If not to witness your life and tell you the truth and tell you because they care about you. And they'll have a lot of, I'm just saying, they'll have no trouble telling you where your weakness is. Listen to them.
As they perceive it, and it doesn't mean those are truths either. Some people are not well trained in observations versus opinions, and so we have to all help. But they're coming from love when they say, you could call your mom more often, or whatever it is. Again, be over there with them. Don't be over here with you, because you'll be defensive. It's be curious as you've been today, and I appreciate it. Be over there, and what makes you say that? Oh my gosh, how does that affect you when that happens? And again, it's being curious and learning. And it's, guess what? It brings you closer to people, and it brings you closer to yourself.
It will lead to a great conversation, and I don't think there's anything more important. A great conversation can change the trajectory of your life. That's why we do this on this show. I love these conversations. Ted, I just really want to thank you for being here today. You're truly what it means to lead with vision, not just position. And one thing it really struck with me, if you're only solving problems, you're stuck in yesterday. Real leadership is about redesigning tomorrow. And I can tell already that authenticity is so much part of your leadership style and that people relate to you. So that's really powerful. And I love the idea of shifting our outlook from me to we. What a much more interesting thing to be involved with.
And if I may, I know you want to bring the clothes, but it brings me to a great, I think it's an Indian parable where people were drowning in the water and the villagers were there by the shoreline. Someone saved the people. And one person started walking upstream. What are you doing? We need to save these people. He said, I'm going to go upstream and find out why they're falling in the first place.
Imagine.
Go upstream.
Go upstream. What a great way to end this. I just really want to thank you for being here, Ted.
Thank you, Kelly.
It was really joyous to have you here.
Yay, thank you so much.
If you'd like more information about Ted, you want to get in touch with him and you want to work with Breakthrough Think, any of that, get in touch with him at his website at tedwhetstone.com. I'll have everything in the show notes for you. He's made himself available for a free exploratory or strategy consultation. Take advantage of it. This is someone that I think could really be helpful. Or maybe you recommend him to your company leaders. This could be a great move. Can you imagine having someone like Ted coming and creating some change in your company. That's the kind of thinking that we spotlight here, because at the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, we're not just featuring experts, we feature messengers, leaders who are using their voice not to blend in, but to break through. And whether you are an entrepreneur or a team lead or a founder or an executive in the trenches, your voice isn't optional. It's your power move, it's your differentiator. And in a world full of truly obnoxious noise and copycat messaging, the leaders who speak with clarity and purpose and presence are the ones who rise. So if you've been waiting for permission to get visible, to own your own message, or to show up on bigger stages, here it is. Consider this your sign. Start speaking like the future depends on it, because it does. So thanks again, Ted, and to everyone out there tuning in. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and this is the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.